Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of the Liberty Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Patrick McFarlane. And on the line with me today, I have Etienne de la Boetie Squared on to talk about his book and his activism. The show notes for this episode may be found at libertyweekly.net/175 because this is episode 175. So, Etienne, how's it going? Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, it's good to be with you. I am coming to you from Niagara Falls, Buffalo, New York. My first time here, headed west to Freedom Fest in South Dakota next week.
That's exciting, man. I take it that you've been to some festivals and events before?
Yeah, so I do the circuit because it's the only way I can really be sure of like getting the book out. And so I do most of the major Liberty events. I'm coming from the Porcupine Freedom Festival, which had last year it had 1,000 to 1,200 people. This year they sold out at 2,500 people, and they sold out about a month before the event, and they would have had 3,000 people if they'd had room for them at Rogers Campground in New Hampshire. This Liberty thing is hot. We're seeing all of these Liberty festivals and Liberty events blow up with record attendance. We were at the Red Pill Expo, record attendance. Freedom Fest is going to have record attendance. The Jackalope Freedom Festival last year tripled from 200 people the year before to 600 people. This year, I think it's going to be 1,000 people. That's in August. You can find us there as well. And like I said, Liberty is hot.
That's awesome. That's a great reason to be optimistic. And I mean, being a content creator or someone who, you know, is a published author, isn't it just so energizing to go to these events and you just come back ready to dive in?
Yeah, absolutely. It's energizing, and you realize that really it is. I think voluntarism and the freedom movement is the fastest growing political movement in the United States. We've been all over the United States. I've been in probably 20 plus states in the past like 2 months alone. And everywhere we go, there's resistance to this organized crime government, the COVID, the lockdowns, the mask mandates. You know, people aren't putting up with it, and they're getting together with their friends and their neighbors, and they're saying, hey, we're not going to do it. And there was a great example of that today in Santa Cruz, where they forced the city government to release David Rodriguez, the host of Freedom Lovers show, the head of the Gatto Project, where they had arrested him on trumped up charges and were trying to hold him without bail and were threatening him with a psych evaluation. Completely trumped up because he's exposing the organized crime government of Santa Cruz that is handing themselves $300,000 salaries. And when they let him out of jail today, there were dozens of people there, you know, cheering and greeting him. And, the Liberty movement is thriving everywhere, even in liberal bastions like Santa Cruz, California.
And so we were talking before we went on the air about this case specifically, and unfortunately I'm not familiar with it, but it sounds to me like from what you were saying that they started with something benign and they were fishing for more. Like, did he have a rap, like a warrant out?
Well, so what it really stems from is in the beginning of the COVID, myself and David were out in California. And starting in April, we didn't believe what the government and media was telling us about the COVID. And so we went into hospitals in what LA Times called the epicenter of COVID in California. And we found empty tents and empty waiting rooms and hospital employees openly speculating the whole thing was a hoax. And that was in Santa Clara, the epicenter of COVID in California. And then we went into Dominican Hospital in Santa Cruz, and there was empty tents and empty waiting rooms. And we just realized that the whole thing was a hoax. So we began helping some local Santa Cruz residents organize resistance in Santa Cruz. And so we started with one night, there was like a dinner with about 10 friends. And it was kind of 20 somethings to 40 somethings that also didn't believe what the government and the media was telling them about the COVID. And the next week we had 20 people. And the week after that, we had 37 people. And the week after that, we had 400 people on a Facebook group. And we were regularly turning out 60, 70 plus people to peaceful civil disobedience in Santa Cruz. We were reopening beaches. We were reopening parks. We were trying to reopen restaurants. We were, you know, taking groups of people to the renting, like vans, and taking groups of people to the Capitol in Sacramento to protest against the mask mandates. And so, and part of doing that, we were exposing the illegitimacy of government. And for those that haven't read my book, Government, the Biggest Scam in History Exposed, the thesis is that government was never intended to protect life, liberty, and property. Government has always been about robbing and controlling the population, and they get away with it. The subtitle is How Intergenerational Organized Crime Runs the Government and the Media, and they get away with it because it's the government and the media working together, and the media is there to give government legitimacy, to only cover what government wants them to cover, to minimize or ignore completely the authentic voices of the alternative media. And so David was exposing that, and I was, you know, both David and myself were exposing that, and we were exposing that the organized crime government in Santa Cruz, California was paying themselves $300,000 plus salaries a year, including the sheriff was making $380,000 a year. The city manager was making $390,000 a year. There were a bunch of undersheriffs that were making $300,000 a year. The head psychiatrist that was about to try and put David in jail and question his sanity was making $330,000 a year. And so they're living high off money stolen from others at the point of a gun. And I don't think that they like David Rodriguez exposing it. And so one of the things David does is he drives without a license plate because there's no law in California or any other state. Everybody's got a right to travel freely unless you're engaged in commerce. I would argue that you have the right to travel freely even if you aren't engaged in commerce. But the law says that if you're not engaged in commerce, you don't have to display a license plate and you don't have to display a driver's license. And so they had trumped up a bunch of charges against David in an effort to silence what I believe is to silence his activism. And so the town rallied around him. We've got a go get funding, out for David, that I'll probably put on, my website, government-scam.com/David. That's not up yet. Give me a day or two, but like I'm planning on, but we've got, we're raising money for his defense, but they locked him in a cage for 14 days without bail. They only let him out of the cage 3 hours a week, and they were threatening him with declaring him insane. They would put him up for a mental evaluation because he doesn't believe in government, as if that makes you insane. Right. That's the denominator of sanity as far as I'm concerned. But they were threatening him with a mental evaluation that would have been done by the same crew of people that David was exposing for handing themselves $300,000 plus salaries. And so this is the level of organized crime government, even on the local level. You know, we're robbing you, we're handing, you know, money over to our friends and our colleagues at ridiculous rates. That's 4 to 7 times. I looked up the average income in Santa Cruz, and the public servants are making 4 to 5 times plus what the average salary is. How do servants make 4 to 5 times what the masters make? It's just ridiculous. It's organized crime, and it's finally being exposed, and people are waking up to it.
So when you were doing all of your activism kind of at the beginning of COVID, what were some of the ways that you were organizing people? Because I know at least a big criticism of people in the liberty movement is that ANCAPs, voluntarists, libertarians, all we do is talk theory, and we're just in our mom's basement, not really doing anything or taking action. What was, it's not hard to find something to do active, mm-hmm. active wise. So how were you getting in people interested in this and contacting them and organizing?
So, you know, my foundation is called the Art of Liberty Foundation. And one of the things that we try and do is we try and get people together and we try and make it fun to resist. And we want to make sure that people always have like a good time. And so, you know, we just, David and I just happened to be attending a dinner party, like I said, for about, you know, 10 people, 10, 20 to 40 somethings that were all friends that did not believe what the government and the media was telling them about the COVID. Mm-hmm. And so we showed up and we just come from the hospitals. We just, you know, visited them. So we were able to fill in, you know, some pieces, and then we helped them to begin organizing their friends and their family. And so the next week we had a sign making party, and, you know, we had it at another friend's house. And we had wine and cheese and crackers, and, you know, the 10 people brought 10 kind of other people, and everybody had a real good time. And so then the week after that, the 20 people brought another 17 people, and we were marching through Santa Cruz bullhorning going, "It's just the flu, people. It's just the nice. Flu. COVID is the engineered, manufactured reason for the bailouts. It's a robbery. They spent billions to make trillions. They're handing themselves trillions of dollars in stimulus and bailouts. It's a robbery. It's just the flu. It's the government and the media working together. It's a monopoly media." And we marched through Santa Cruz handing out, you know, leaflets. And then the next week we'd had a Facebook group, and that Facebook group had ballooned to around almost 400 people after that. And then, you know, we had people that wanted to get involved. They wanted to reopen businesses. You know, at the time, this was kind of at the early stages of the lockdown, and they're bankrupting these mom and pop businesses so they can come in with what, you know, appears to be disaster capitalism and economic warfare against independent wealth. Like, we're going to bankrupt, you know, mom and pop restaurants, mom and pop coffee shops, yoga studios, et cetera. And we're going to come in with chain restaurants, chain coffee shops. And we break all of that down in a multi-investigator investigation that we did. The Art of Liberty Foundation did at government-scam/plandemic, where we found evidence of disaster capitalism, evidence of economic warfare, evidence of foreknowledge, Event 201, you know, the fact that these COVID tests were already in the supply chain before the COVID hit. And now, you know, recently it came out that the University of North Carolina had a deal with Moderna in, I want to say, like October of 2019 to develop a coronavirus vaccine. And so this is, you know, there's crazy evidence that they had planned this in an effort to give everybody these shots. And so they already had the shots in the pipeline. They already had the, you know, they'd already, you know, planned everything out in Event 201. They'd already war gamed it. You know, it was the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It was the John Hopkins Center for Health Security, which are the folks doing the official quote unquote COVID numbers. And it was the World Economic Forum, and participating in Event 201 was the head of the Chinese CDC and, you know, a representative from the World Bank who used to work for the Rockefeller Foundation, and one of the, the CIA was there. And so, you know, it's the usual suspects for dirty tricks, that involve the monopoly media and how do you control perception, which I break down in the book. So again, the book, Government, the Biggest Scam in History Exposed, it's the government and the media working together on the media side, on the old media side. You got about 5 to 6 dozen companies. By the way, the book is designed to wake up your friends and family, because most people are visual learners. And so, in my day job, I try help Fortune 500 companies learn at the speed of light. And so, you know, how do you get people that are new to this information? How do you take them from 0 to 60 in the shortest amount of time? Most people are visual learners. If they see something, they come to a deeper understanding quicker. And so we've got a lot of media ownership charts, media organizational charts. We do a lot with memes, historical photos, and we leverage the way that people learn so that we can really take them, you know, like, oh, my God, you know, like if you say, oh, well, you're saying all the all the media are in on it together, and you show them an organization chart showing how almost every single major reporter, editor, publisher, et cetera, is either a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderberg Group, or the Trilateral Commission. And you've now made something that was invisible to them visible through visualization, and boom, they're like, oh, I didn't realize that was going on. And you've made something that was invisible now visible, and now they come to that moment of insight much quicker than if you just tried to explain that to them. Maybe they would have believed you, but once they see it with their own eyes, they're like, oh, I didn't understand that was going on.
And one thing I appreciate the most about the book is that you have hyperlinks in it. And I mean, you don't get the hyperlinks when you have the physical book version, but mm-hmm. I assume, you know, there's an electronic version, right? And so,
not only is there electronic version,
there's the Liberator,
the book,
right?
Is actually backed up by an 8 or a 16 gigabit flash drive, credit card size flash drive that we call the Liberator, that has, not only does it have the PDF with all of the active hyperlinks for all of the major claims in the book, but it has all the visualizations, full size and high definition, so that you can zoom in and see those media ownership charts, see those media organization charts. You can see the visualizations on the monopolization of consumer goods or the monopolization of seed companies. You know, you can get it all. And we sell the book for $25. We sell the flash drive for $15, or we have a combo deal for $35. And everything in the book is backed up on this flash drive, because this is what the kind of thing that is disappearing off the internet. This is what is being, voided off of YouTube, what is being de-indexed by Google, shadow banned. This is an example. You nailed it. So, you know, when we say that there's, you know, like, oh, you're saying all the media are in on it together. Yeah, they're all in on it together. Yep. And here's a visualization showing how, you know, almost every major publisher, editor, or reporter that is covering the COVID or is selling the bailouts or the next war based on lies and manufactured intelligence is a member of either the Bilderberg Group, the Council on Foreign Relations, or the Trilateral Commission, which, for the record, Jeffrey Epstein was a member of the exact three organizations. And so not only are they controlling perception on the, you know, using control of the media, but they're controlling politicians, prominent individuals, even royalty, by doing what is called a Blackstone operation in Washington, D.C., which is they'll get a guy or a woman drunk, slip him a roofie, throw him into a room with a little boy or a little girl, and then blackmail them with the video that they have taken. And so, this is how Washington, D.C. works. It is the district of criminals. And once you understand how they're all connected into a handful of organizations that are advancing and promoting their members into these key reporter and editorships to be able to control perception on a very, you know, great scale, then things like the COVID begin to make sense.
So beforehand, I wanted to touch on something, because I had asked you how people organize in you know, to fulfill certain activist goals. But the one thing that immediately came to mind was The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. Have you read that novel?
I have. It's a fantastic Robert Heinlein.
Yeah. And so in it, they're describing exactly how their resistance works. And it sounded a little bit like what you were describing, but it's not like what you were describing happened kind of organically, is that it wasn't really directed in one sense, but that's the beauty of a decentralized revolution. Like, so if, for those who aren't familiar, in the book, they describe creating their own revolution, and they have like exactly what you described. One person will have, they'll have their contacts. They'll have like three people. Mm-hmm. And then below that, each one of those three people will have three more people. And in a sense, it's like, no, there is a leader in the book, but it's not that the leader is directly directing everyone what to do. It's kind of like a chain link thing, right?
Well, I'll tell you this, and what we did in Santa Cruz, or the way that it ended up being expressed in Santa Cruz, is different people did different things. And so we had one group that liked to do documentaries on the beach and would have, like, you know, would get people together, and sometimes it would be a documentary, sometimes it would just be a bunch of, you know, 20, 15, 30 minute YouTube clips, you know, shown on a giant inflatable screen, you know, on the beach. Sometimes we'd have documentary screenings at people's house. Sometimes we would be marching through Santa Cruz bullhorning. Sometimes they would do free hug events. Sometimes we'd rent, you know, all chip in and rent, you know, a giant, you know, van, and, you know, take everybody that wanted to go to the Sacramento Capitol, to the Capitol. And we would, you know, participate in, you know, protests at the Capitol that had thousands of people, 3,000 people with no masks, no super spreading, no anything like that. And so there were so many things going on. So sometimes we do Liberty bonfires, that there was a member, I forgot who it was, but a member of our group actually said, you know, my social life actually improved during the COVID. you know, we would have these beach parties that they were closing the beach in Santa Cruz from, I want to say, I think it was like 11 to 5 o'clock. And so we would have a beach party, and we'd have 60, 70 people that would just all walk out onto the beach together going, we're reopening the beach. And we'd come onto the beach and boom, there's a like beach party. We'd have some people were surfing. Some people were playing badminton. Some people, we had like drum circles. We had guy with this really got fantastic, you know, artists playing like acoustic guitar, and it was like all ages, and it was like everybody's like super cool, beautiful women. Like it was amazing. And so like we made it fun to resist. And when you make it fun to resist, then everybody wants to get involved. Everybody wants to do a little bit of something. And when you've got everybody doing a little bit of something, then all of a sudden you've got the government sweating. And by the way, I was there for 2 months before I had to move on and do, you know, other things. But in the 8 weeks that I was there, we shut down the police. The police would come out and they'd say, hey, you know, you guys got to get off this beach. And we'd say, we're not getting off the beach. And I'm like, you know, you don't own the beach. We wouldn't stand on the Constitution. We'd stand on our natural law, common law right to be left alone by the government as long as you're not harming anybody else. We'd point out to the police that when they're using violence on peaceful people, they're the criminals. And we stood them down 8 times in 8 weeks. They'd come out and they'd say ridiculous things like, all right, I'm going to give citations to we're going to give citations to 5 people in this group. Let me see. Let's see some driver's licenses. And nobody would move a muscle. And they're like, I need to see these driver's licenses. And they'd get all mad and they'd get flustered and everything like that. I got to see some driver's licenses. And we would just all just smile and just, you know, we're not going to give you any driver's licenses. We haven't done anything wrong. You guys are the criminals. And they'd get flustered and they'd leave. And after 8 weeks, the public health officer rescinded the policy in Santa Cruz and said, we're no longer going to do this because the people refuse to be governed in this manner. And so you can beat City Hall, but it takes getting together and it takes standing on your common law, natural law rights and saying, hey, you guys are in the wrong. You're the ones that are using violence on peaceful people. You should say no collectively. And then the Thick Red Line movement. I don't know if you're familiar with the Thick Red Line movement. That came out of the civil disobedience because the police would say, man, we don't want to be doing this, but like, what do you want us to do? And, you know, we just tell them, well, you ought to get together collectively and say no collectively. And then it's the people and the police versus the politicians. And the people, if you're supported by the community, then the politicians can't make you do it. And you can find out about the Thick Red Line movement in thickredline.org. But, you know, we beat City Hall because we made it fun to do it.
And so what do you think is the biggest thing that's stopping the average person from engaging in the civil disobedience?
They don't know how to start. And really all it is getting your friends together. And so what I would recommend is I would recommend Freedom Cells and the Freedom Cell Network, and just finding, you know, start with 5 to 8 people in your kind of immediate group, your core group of friends, and, you know, get together a Freedom Cell. There you go. Got the Freedom Cell Network on the thing. And then after those five to eight people get together, then you grow it from the initial 5 to 8 people, and, you know, have, you know, wine and cheese, have a get together, have, make signs, you know, give everybody something to do, make it kind of easy to kind of flex their activist muscle. Like I said, our second event that we did was a sign making party and a bonfire. And so, like, we had a bonfire, let everybody introduce themselves. And so, you know, find out how everybody got there and what everybody is concerned about, and just, you know, make half of it organization and resistance, and then just make half of it fun and just bringing people together. And boom, I promise it'll grow the exact same way that it grew for us in Santa Cruz.
And I've noticed that people are hungry for this knowledge. I mean, for this information, especially the information that's contained in your book. I've just anecdotally speaking, you know, I've had people open up to this kind of information that thought I was crazy before, you know, but it takes something like this to realize, like, holy crap, there are things at work here that are beyond what we see. And have you noticed that? Like, are the people at, like, say, for instance, in California, were the people who were being active with you, were they people who were kind of already in this space, or were there people that who just were kind of new to it?
So I would say that it was half and half when they got started. But between David and myself, we created, I think, dozens of new voluntarists. I think I probably sold 30 plus, you know, or more copies of the book just to the people within the group. And I'd say probably half of them were either libertarian or voluntarists, you know, when they got started. And then, you know, the other half, you know, kind of came along, but we were creating new voluntarists left and right. And the membership, David runs a group called the Santa Cruz Voluntarists. And I forgot what that, you know, ballooned to, but I want to say that we had like 120 when we got started. And now I want to say there's over 300. And so don't quote me exactly on those numbers, but it was it was a tremendous growth in the Santa Cruz Voluntarists while we were there. And that is with them censoring our groups on Facebook. And so, you know, at one time, and we had the exact same thing happen at Thick Red Line, they shut down the ability for people to invite their friends to the Committee to Reopen Santa Cruz, which was our first effort at organizing folks. That's the group that ballooned to 400 plus. And then when we launched Thick Red Line Project, they shut down the ability for us to invite people to that group as well. And so even with censorship on Facebook, you know, we were still, you know, we were still growing those groups, even though we were being censored by the platform.
So I guess moving a little bit towards, like, the future now, do you have any thoughts on where this is going? I mean, in terms of, you know, we're seeing the vaccines being pushed more and more. We're seeing Joe Biden talk about reading text messages and talking about, you know, the post office employees spying on you and people going door to door. Like, I, one, like, strand of hope that I have is that people, you know, they locked down once, now we're open back up. And I don't know if you can put that genie back in the bottle. But what do you think about all that?
So I think when the cold and flu season comes back around, everything is going to be labeled COVID. And so that's one of the reasons why we're pushing Thick Red Line, is because, the UK just went, you know, just voted to have mandatory vaccines. It's coming here to the United, I believe it's coming here to the United States as well. I think that the shot is going to get people sick. There's already, you know, speculation that Delta variant is, you know, people that are getting sick from the vaccines. And so you're creating this kind of vicious cycle of the more people that get the vaccine, the more people that get sick. the more people that get sick, the more people they call it COVID, the more people they call it COVID, the more they're able to, like, you know, claim it's a pandemic and that they've got to take extraordinary measures like mandatory vaccinations. But that's the reason that I'm, you know, worried about what's going on in the going on in the country. One of the things that I think is good is that, you know, I've seen the book has exploded in popularity the past 3 months, and we've sold thousands and thousands and thousands of copies of the book to over 20 different countries, including over, we've had almost 100 people that have bought what we call friends bundles, where a donor to the Art of Liberty Foundation has made it cost effective for people to buy low cost copies to share with their friends and family. And we've sold over 600 copies in just the past 3 months for these friends bundles, where people are giving out, you know, 5 or 10 copy or ordering 5 or 10 copies and spreading around their neighborhood. People are sending me photos of them putting the book into little mini libraries in, you know, kind of neighborhoods. People are telling me stories about how they're putting it as the coffee table book on their Airbnbs. And so, you know, the word is getting out that government is illegitimate and criminal. Whether it's my book, whether it's these liberty events that are blowing up, people are figuring it out. It appears to be the fastest growing political movement in the United States and probably the world. And it's only going in one direction, because once you realize that that the government is illegitimate, undesirable, and unnecessary, and that everybody would be, you know, much better off and wealthier if they did not have a government in the first place, then nobody goes back to getting chumped by government and its little mandatory schools and propaganda and unethically manipulative, youth programs and things like that. Once people discover that there's a man behind the curtain in the media, or once people discover that, that the media is being controlled by a handful of corporations running hundreds and hundreds of subsidiaries, nobody goes back to believe in the media. Like, once you realize how the magician does the trick, then you can't get fooled by the trick. And so it is a revolution that's only going in one direction. That gives me great hope. I'm very, very optimistic. I think we're going to turn this around. And so, I'm trying to do my part. And if everybody, puts their shoulder against the door, we're going to win this thing.
Hang on a sec there, Etienne. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the portion of the show where I tell you how you can help support this content. Your one-stop shop is libertyweekly.net/support. There you can find links to my Patreon and Subscribestar pages, also float.app, where you can help support with crypto. You'll find cryptocurrency addresses there and my PayPal. I just released a bonus episode for my Patreon subscribers, giving you a behind-the-scenes tour of my new studio, as well as talking about the future of Liberty Weekly and giving some behind-the-scenes updates there. Hint, hint, the future is very bright. Another program I just started participating in is Rakuten Cashback. If you use that, it's completely free. You use that program and you get cash back for shopping at a bunch of websites. If you spend $30, I will get $30 for the show. And so it'll be, you know, you just do your regular shopping that you would otherwise do, except you get cash back and you help out the show. Really appreciate that. Short link is libertyweekly.net/cashback to take you right there. Non-monetary ways that you can help support the podcast, of course, is writing me a rating, review, commenting, sharing, subscribing, liking, telling your friends, doing all that stuff, the legwork on the ground. The show has been getting, like, lots of attention lately, so I really do appreciate that. Welcome to all the new people. Major announcement here is that I am assembling a dream team of writers to write at Liberty Weekly, and our first writer, Sean Leal, posted his first article on the website that happened Friday, and that article is entitled Property Rights for Non-Libertarians, and it's the first in a series that he's going to do, some hardcore libertarian theory. Sean is the author of Consent is Morality, A Philosophy of Peace. You can pick up his book at paxdeals.com, paxdeals.com. Sean will be on the podcast. However, I'm booked out for a few weeks, and I got to read his book first. So he's going to be on the podcast. We're going to chat about his work and his book, and I think you're really going to like his stuff. So go check out that column. So we're really looking forward to that. I'm still looking for writers. So if you want to be published on Liberty Weekly, please send me your submissions through a DM or just email me at patrick.mcfarlane@libertyweekly.net. That's about it for this week. Without further ado, back to the show. Have you told kind of your Liberty story before on air? I know I kind of like to collect people's Liberty stories, and I'm curious how you found this whole scene.
So, in 1988, Ron Paul came and spoke to my college, junior college in Fort Worth, Texas. And I'm like, oh, wow, I guess I'm a libertarian. And then I didn't really think about it. I got interested later on and I went to work for one of the big four think tanks in Washington, D.C., the libertarian one. And I was a researcher and I had access to a $3,000 a month LexisNexis terminal. And it was right after the government had murdered 80 men, women, and children at Waco, Texas, that the Oklahoma City bombing happened. And I had this LexisNexis terminal, and I realized that the story that was coming out of Oklahoma City from the local news and from the alternative news was very, very different than the story that was coming out from the mainstream media. And so I began comparing the local news and the mainstream, and I realized that the media was lying about the events of Oklahoma City and that the federal government, the FBI, and the ATF had blown up a daycare center to tar the militia movement that was growing rapidly after the FBI and the ATF had murdered 80 men, women, and children at Waco. And so after they did that, people started saying, alarm, alarm, the government has gone rogue. The government's just murdered 80 men, women, and children and burned down a church in Texas, formed militias. And they had to make these militias look bad. So they took a sheep-dipped former, quotation mark, special forces guy named Tim McVeigh. They made him look like a white supremacist. And then they blew up a daycare center in a federal building to make it look like the militia were white supremacist baby killers. And once you peeled back the onion just a little bit, you very quickly realized that the government was the number one suspect. Everything that I discovered using the LexisNexis terminal and all of the resource material I had working at one of the big four think tanks was essentially confirmed by something called the Oklahoma City Bombing Investigation Committee that was run by a state rep named Charles Key. And then essentially everything that I discovered was memorialized in an award-winning documentary called A Noble Lie that we feature on the Liberator flash drive. And so you can still get that. I think you can get that documentary for free on BitChute or on Library or on Odyssey or on some of these other platforms. I know it's kind of disappeared off YouTube, but if you take a look at the movie A Noble Lie, you'll discover what I discovered. And I want to say, I think that was 1996. And once you realize that the federal government is blowing up daycare centers, then you can't help but, you know, begin collecting the evidence. And that's what I've done. And that's what I've tried to put together with not just the book, but the flash drives that back up the book with all of these documentaries, PDFs, books on PDF, the stuff that is disappearing off the internet, being de-indexed by Google. I've been trying to archive all of this evidence of government and media criminality. And you know, that's essentially what I do. You can get it all at government-scam.com, and you can take a look at all the archived evidence at government-scam/liberator. That's what I'm all about.
Yeah. I think that's a wonderful idea. I mean, first off, to make it, you know, all this to archive it, one thing, you know, I have my own like external hard drive that I try and squirrel stuff away on, but it's such, you know, it's like drinking from the fire hose. And in a lot of ways, I think that's how they kind of keep this all under wraps, is because in order to break through that barrier, you know, the conditioning that we're taught in government schools, it takes a lot of like someone very kindly and patiently holding your feet to the fire. You know what I mean? But it also takes a lot of work and curiosity on your own behalf. So I had somebody, just for my own story, I had someone, a roommate in college, turn me from a Ron Paul libertarian, a Young Americans for Liberty type, into, you know, a Larkin Rose voluntarist kind of thing. So, but mm-hmm. I still have my Ron Paul 2012 brochure that I got, a flyer, and that was kind of the beginning of my journey here. So, well, so with the time that we have remaining, do you want to talk just a few topics in here that really kind of piqued my interest when I was reading your book? And one of them is that, you know, there's a story behind the Pledge of Allegiance, and it's one that I've never heard, and I would suffice to say probably a lot of people have never heard it. So what is that story?
So first, why don't you throw the cover of the book back on screen, and then for everybody that can see, you're seeing an American classroom from 1943 that is essentially doing what most people would recognize as the Nazi salute. And so what most people don't realize is that the Nazi salute originated in the United States, where it was called the Bellamy salute, and it was the product of a media operation in 1892 run by Freemasons. It was called the Perry Mason Company. They published something called a magazine called the Youth's Companion, which was the most popular magazine of the time. Over 500,000 subscribers in 1892, which was, I think there was only about 70 million people in the country at the time. So it was just an absolute huge, huge, you know, very well-funded media operation. They were pushing something called military socialism. And back then, you know, there wasn't, the federal flag was not in most you know, classrooms. Most classrooms didn't think, you know, most people didn't think of themselves as Americans. They thought of themselves as Texans or Virginians or, you know, whatever state that they lived in. And the federal government was relatively weak. And in the same way that the organized crime system is pushing us towards one world government today, using groups like the Trilateral Commission and the European Union and the African Union and the North American Union to consolidate regional power and then ultimately global power, they don't like having to run, you know, they didn't like having to run 50 different, you know, individual governments the same way they don't like having to run 190 plus individual countries. And so we just want to have one, you know, system where it's much easier for us to control. And so they began engineering that control by getting federalism and military socialism, you know, robotic chanting, Pledge of Allegiance, which is unethically manipulative. I like to, you know, it's we're slipping the population government, gubernare mente, gubernare to govern and control, mente the mind. We're going to slip it to them as a religion. We're not going to call it a religion, but it's going to have all of like the little tools and the techniques of an unethically manipulative religion or a cult. And so we're going to force the kids to go to the church school where the priest, the teacher is going to, you know, put them and teach them the common prayer of the Pledge of Allegiance and have them do the, you know, the flag worship, and they're going to sing the hymns, and we'll take them to Washington, D.C. Mecca and in eighth grade, and we'll take them into the Capitol that looks like a cathedral for a reason, and we'll take them to the monuments, or, you know, we'll take them to the temples, and we'll show them the deities of Lincoln and Washington, and we'll be very, very reverent, and we'll get them to tithe. And then we got another program for the order followers, which is the government affiliated youth program. So the Cub Scouts, the Boy Scouts, it's the same as the Hitler Youth or the East German or the, you know, the Russian, you know, Young Pioneers. They're all running the same program as we break down in the book. But with the Pledge of Allegiance, the first part of that was getting the federal flag into classrooms that had never had it before. And so this magazine called the Youth's Companion had a premium program where if you sold enough subscriptions in your class or whatever, that they would give your class a free American flag for the classroom as step number one. So now we got free flags going into all the different classrooms. And then the other thing was it was accompanied by something that was called the Bellamy Salute. And the Bellamy Salute started out as a military salute. And so you'd say, "I pledge allegiance to the flag," and you'd start with a military salute. And then when you said "to the flag," you'd stick your hand out, up, palm up towards the flag. And that's the way that American students started doing the Pledge of Allegiance in 1892. That was adopted. Now, in 1907, from what I understand, there was a movie called Ben-Hur, not the one with Charlton Heston. This is, you know, before Charlton Heston's time. But they began popularizing the Roman salute. So the, you know, the handout, and the kids just kind of started doing their handout because that was like the cool thing of doing. And so in the overwhelming majority of the pictures that you see from the time, most of the kids are doing it, you know, hand at palm down, the traditional, you know, Nazi salute. The Italian fascists copied our program. So like, okay, how do you slave them up? Okay, you give them a flag. And so it's like a program of, you know, how do you slave them up? And so the fascists wanted to slave up their population, so they adopted it in 1919. The Nazi Party adopted it in 1926. The German army adopted it in 1944. And then once the crimes of Nazi Germany became apparent in the 40s, the United States switched to the hand over the heart method on Army Day in 1943. And then most people have grown up doing it the hand over the heart, but essentially it was the Nazi salute. And the picture, I'll tell you what I can prove and I can't prove in the book, but the picture on the cover was from a series that was taken by Hollywood's LA Times in 1943, around the time of the changeover to the hand over the heart. And I believe the reason that the kids kind of look like all weird, you know, in the picture is because they're used to doing it like this. And the photographer is like, no, you got to do it like that, because they were trying to distance themselves from the Nazis. I know we don't do Nazi stuff. Nazis do this. We do this. We're not Nazis. No, we're going to do this now. It's totally, totally different. Except it's not. And so that's really what the first part of the book breaks down, is that there's a playbook to slaving up a population. There's 20 plus techniques. And then I explain the technique, and then show what it looked like in Nazi Germany, East Germany, the Soviet Union, and the U.S. so that the reader, in no uncertain terms, understands that the U.S. is running the exact same playbook as the Nazis, the Soviets, and the East Germans. And when you see it with your own eyes and you see it, you know, next to each other, then you can't unsee it. And so that's one of the ways that we're able to take your friends and your family and kind of bring them into that moment of insight, that moment of understanding, because they're able to see it with their own eyes and recognize that, hey, somebody's running game on them, that this is an indoctrinated system, that this is a playbook, that, you know, that, you know, you may or may not have noticed that the government is using, you know, religious symbolism in their propaganda. But if you stack up 30 examples of it, then all of a sudden the brain goes, hey, wait a minute, I didn't see those when they came by one at a time. That's artificial. That's a pattern. The brain's really good at pattern recognition. And like, they're running game on me. And you would not believe how many people get visibly mad when they see that. Like, I've had people get like, hey, you know, get upset, and they realize, hey, the media and the government are running game on them. And so, so that's how we wake up people with the book. It's, you know, if you've ever had trouble, you know, trying to explain these things to your friends and your family, then I may have a very sharp tool for, you know, that may be able to help.
Yeah. And so one thing I kind of keyed in on is this phrase, neuro-linguistic programming speech techniques. Mm-hmm. And there's a hyperlink there. So I assume, you know, you've been describing a lot of those techniques just in the past, you know, in the past couple minutes here. But is there anything specific that comes to mind with that phrase?
Yeah. So there's been that specific link goes to a analysis of Barack Obama's of speeches that he's given, where he has obviously been trained in a technique called neurolinguistic programming or neurolinguistic speech techniques. And so some of the techniques are like, it's called pacing. You do it at a certain, you know, you emphasize certain words, you go at a certain pace. It's almost hypnotic. There's other, you know, specifics to the, you know, to the technique, but that analysis is, you know, that these presidents are, they're not so much elected as they are selected. And so, you know, if you take a look at Obama's background, like that, he was a kind of media creation from the very beginning. You know, they created the legend of Obama by you know, making him editor of the Harvard Law Review when he had not written a single, you know, article for the Harvard Law Review. He had a Vanity Fair profile in college. He was in a class at Columbia University taught by Zbigniew Brzezinski with four other students. His mother worked with Timothy Geithner's father. Timothy Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, the head of the New York Federal Reserve Bank, worked with his father at the Ford Foundation. This is a guy that was created. They created the legend for him. They taught him neurolinguistic speech patterns. They gave him, you know, they, you know, made him a celebrity through Vanity Fair. They made him editor of the Harvard Law Review. They, you know, they created him for this job. And if it wasn't the presidency, it would have been some other, you know, puppet position, governor, senator, you know, whatever it is. He just excelled at lying to the camera and being able to sell whatever the lie of the day was. It's like it's a contest. I probably like to call the presidency like a kind of contest to see who's the most talented liar in the country, the most believable and talented liar. He won and got to be president. The other funny thing is Donald Trump, the apprentice, he was the apprentice. So they're giving him this media training. They're creating the legend of him as this really astute businessman and everything like that. And he was the apprentice. Can he pull it off? Can he create his legend in a way that would allow him to, you know, kind of win the presidency? And he was able to do that with the kind of media training provided to him by, the network that put him on television.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a really interesting episode of James Corbett's podcast about precedent Trump. I don't know if you've seen that, but it really broke it down for me, especially like how Donald Trump's presidency really was just business as usual. I mean, so to have your hand held through that, it's really useful.
So, you know, I break it down in the book in memes. Yeah. And so the other thing in the book, you know, final thing is, you know, we got some of the funniest memes in Liberty. And some of those memes, you know, show that, you know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Right. There's no difference between really the Republican and Democrat on all of the issues that are really important to the organized crime system. They're 100% in lockstep on them taking half your income, on, you know, on wars based on lies and manufactured intelligence, on domestic, you know, warrantlessly wiretapping and spying on you, on a private central bank creating money, you know, backstopping the money center banks to create money out of thin air using fractional reserve banking, even though it's inflationary and even though it's stealing half of the value out of your money. They're both lockstep on the vaccines. Trump was, you know, was 100% behind the vaccine. Biden's 100. I mean, this is like they're lockstep on everything that is important to the ruling class. And then there's a couple of football issues that, you know, divide them. But it is monopoly system in the same way that, you know, we'll have Target and Walmart, and Target is designed for kind of urban liberals and Walmart is rural conservatives, right. And they're even red and blue. You know, we've got, you know, we're not going to just leave one because it would be obvious if we just left one. So we'll leave Target and Walmart. We'll leave Verizon and AT&T. We'll leave Staples and Office Depot. We'll leave Dick's Sporting Goods and Sports Authority. We'll leave Republicans and Democrats, it's monopoly, but we're going to, it would be too obvious. There's just one. So we'll leave two, red and blue, and then we'll play them off of each other. And then that way the population can get really, really mad. And every 4 years they kick the guy out. And then that diffuses the anger because the population thinks that they've beaten the system and gotten the bad guy out, not understanding that it's the same group of people behind both of the candidates. And all they've got to do is to get you to vote for the lesser of two evils is just give you somebody that's a little bit more evil, knowing that they want you to vote for, you know, government guy number one. You know, you got government guy number one or government guy number two, which is it going to be? But you're going to get government and you're going to get robbed and mulked and stolen and tricked and chumped. And so, so it's monopoly. It's the same group of people behind both people. And you can read all about it in Government, the Biggest Scam in History, exposed at government-scam.com.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. And I, you know, I'm glad that someone with your background is using your skills and kind of the same skills that they use against us, but in a good way. You know, it's not like fighting over the handgun in the room or anything, but I mean, you know how people learn and you know how to convey this message. So I think it's great that, you know, someone is doing it.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So, okay. So any other plugs? I know, do you want to plug like your appearances at Freedom Fest and in other festivals?
Yeah, well, we'll be at Freedom Fest in booth 900, and we're going to be at the Jackalope Freedom Festival. And so Freedom Fest is in Rapid City, South Dakota, and it's, I want to say, July 21st through the 24th. And then we'll be at the Jackalope Freedom Festival in Baca Meadows, Arizona. That's jackalopefreedomfestival.com, and that is August 1st through the 10th, I think. And so come on out and see us at any, at either of those festivals. And then we're done. And I can't wait to get off the road because it really is tough to get anything done while you're on the road. And I've got another book to write. So,
yeah, I'm sure I know that feeling. So, well, the name is Etienne de la Boetie Squared. The website is government-scam.com. And what was it? Thickredline.org and freedomcells.org.
Thickredline.org is something that we support, and freedomcells.org is something we support as well. And both of those are great organizations that deserve everybody's time and attention.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks for coming on. It's been a pleasure to meet you and to get to chat. Take care.
Absolutely. Thanks, Patrick, and thanks to the audience.
Hey, one last thing before we go. Keep an eye out for my columns that appear at Liberty Weekly, also at the Libertarian Institute at libertarianinstitute.org/Patrick. And yeah, oh, hey, I forgot to mention in the beginning, the Liberty Weekly podcast is a part of the Libertarian Institute. So go check out the Libertarian Institute at libertarianinstitute.org, where you can find other fine podcasts such as The Scott Horton Show, Year Zero with Tommy Salmons, Don't Tread on Anyone with Keith Knight, Free Man Beyond the Wall with Pete Quinones, and Conflicts of Interest with the great Kyle Anzalone. All right, so check out all those things. Thanks so much for listening, guys. I really do appreciate it. I hope that you have a great week, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.